This is Dr. Seed, and this is the first lecture on Chapter 10 for long-term liabilities. Remember that long-term liabilities are those liabilities that have a year of more than 1 year. Also, those long-term liabilities have interest accrued against those liabilities, which we must continue to show on the balance sheet. But also remember that there are short-term liabilities, which are those liabilities that are due within 1 year, and usually we need to show that on the balance sheet as a amount just for that particular period of 1 year. The concept for long-term liabilities, of course, is interest that's being accrued on those liabilities. If you'll turn to page 448, you will see the in the middle of the page, you will see the amount that I want you to take a look at, which is the $100 1 year today. We're going to look at as a future value concept and present value concept, and I want you to join with me in reading. The concepts of present value and future value are used to measure the effect of the time on the value of money. To illustrate, if you're to receive $100 from 1 year from today, it is worth $100 today. Obviously not, because if you had the $100 today, you could either use it now or invest it and earn interest. If the $100 isn't to be received from 1 year, those options are not available. The present value of $1 is the value today of $1 to be received or paid in the future, given a specific interest rate. To determine the value today of money to be received or paid in the future, we must discount. Notice the word discount. The future amount, reduce the amount to its present value. What's the value going to be today, the book says, of 10% of $100, not necessarily the future value, what it's going to be in 1 year. What is it that you're trying to achieve? Well, you're trying to achieve the $100. So let's look at the example. For example, if money can earn 10% per year, $100 to be received 1 year from now is approximately equal to $90.91 received today. Now let's look at the math together. Putting it another way, $90.91 is invested today in an account that earns 10% interest for 1 year. The interest earned will be $9.09. Well, what that is $90.91 times 10% times the 1 year is $9.09. For the sum of the $90.91 principal plus $9.09 interest would equal $100 at the end of 1 year. Thus, the present value of $100 to be received or paid, whichever, in 1 year is with 10% interest is $90.91. The present value relationship can be diagrammed as follows. Notice in the graph, in the example, they have a future value of $100. But notice the present value of that is $90.91. So if we went to the bank today and we put $90.91 in the bank at 10% interest, we would have $100 in 1 year. Now let's look on page 449, top of the page. Computing the present value of a single amount. To use a present value table, simply locate the appropriate number of periods in the leftmost column of the interest rate in the row at the top of the table. The number at the intersection of the selected row and column is the factor representing the present value for $1 for the number of periods of the relevant interest rate. To find the present value of an amount other than a dollar, multiply the factor in the table by that amount. To illustrate the use of a present value, Table 1, Appendix B in the back of your book, to find the present value of a known future amount, assume that $10,000 is to be paid for 4 years from today with the interest rate of 10%. What's the present value of a $10,000 payment? Well, if you had $6,830, the present value tells us at $1 for 4 periods, that amount would be 68.30% times the $10,000 that we want to have in that particular period. Notice it's going to take $6,830 to do that. Now on your test, you will be given a simple present value factor with the amount of payment to do in the future. I will give you the amount of the percentage factor of a present value of a payment. And basically, we're not going to get into having to look up an appendix for a present value amount. I just want you to know, for the sake of the test, that you will be able to take $6,830 in 4 years and you'll have $10,000. Simple math and simple accounting theory. But you need to know present value and future value concepts. Now let's take a look at page 452, computing the present value of annuity. Let's start at the top of the page. In discussing present values and future values, we've assumed only at a single present value or future value with one of the amounts known and other to be computed. With liabilities, we generally know the future amount that must be paid and would like to compute the present value of that future payment. Because this chapter focuses on liabilities, we will concentrate on present value calculations. Many long-term liabilities involve a series of payments rather than one lump sum payment. For example, a company might purchase equipment under an installment agreement requiring payments of $5,000 each year for 5 years. Determine the value today, present value of a series equally spaced, equal amount payments called an annuity is more complicated than determining the present value of a single future payment. To calculate the present value of an annuity, you would need to have to discount the first payment for the one period because such calculations are time consuming and a table is generally used. So we look at, if you look at the yellow box below, you will see that there, to your left, you have now the first payment of 10, 10, 10, 10, and 10, and how that's going to be, how the present value of that annuity is going to be computed at a 12% compounded annual rate. But notice your box. You're starting now. You're actually going back, and you're taking a look at what is it going to cost you for those $10,000 to be paid at 12% at a $1 discounted rate. So if the interest rate is 12% compounded annually, shows a present value factor of 5.65, the factor means that the present value of a dollar paid each year for 10 years discounted at 12% is approximately $5.65. Applying the factor to payments of $10,000 results in the following. So we take the amount of the annual amount, I'm in the little green box now, of $10,000, page 452, times the present value of an annuity at a dollar discounted for 10 payments at 12%. That value is 5.65. For the present value of that is $56,502. So if we used it at a 12% rate, we're going to see that it's going to cost us $6,502 to have that piece of equipment over the 10 payment period. Once again, now I will be giving you the present value factor of the annuity at a dollar discounted. I'll tell you the number of payments. Simple calculation. I just want you to take the annual payment and show me what the present value of that's going to be at the time that the payments are over with, so that you can compute the amount of interest that you're going to be paying. Also, I'm going to be testing you on the theory behind the computing the present value of annuity. Now, I will not make you go. It'll be simple calculation. You'll be able to use your calculator. It will not make you go to a table and look it up. The main thing for the test is I want you to see that there is an annuity versus a present value and how those are particularly computed. And you also need to know the accounting theory behind the future value and present value of an annuity. Let's turn to page 456 in your book, Accounting for Long-Term Liabilities. We're going to specifically be talking about notes payable, mortgage payables, leases, and bonds. As you know, there are benefits and not so many benefits about each type of financing, depending on whether or not you like leases or whether you want to do a note with an interest rate. It all depends on kind of the person and kind of where they are financially. But I wanted you to know that a notes payable usually is for more than 1 year. It's usually paid over an installment basis. Mortgage company, of course, is a mortgage payable is something that's paid over many years, such as 20 or 30, such as a building or a house, personal house. Leases. We're going to talk about in a minute about operating leases versus capital leases, but in an operating lease, you have a certain amount of payment per month, and that particular payment is amortized, and then the lease is over with. A good example is like your apartment. If you rented your apartment for a year, you know then that the lease is over with in a year, and you make payments for 12 months for 1 year, and the lease is finalized. So that's just an operating lease. But a capital lease is much different. A capital lease means that we actually are taking the equipment and we're probably going to own it at the end of the lease, whether we make a balloon payment or whether we just outright own it at the end of the lease. So there's different accounting for different types of long-term liabilities concerning leases, mortgages, and notes. And, of course, we'll get to bonds in the next chapter. Let's turn now to page 457. And we'll see in that particular fact pattern to illustrate at the top of the page, illustrate the accounting for long-term interest bearing note payable, assuming on January 1, 2012, Giraffe Company borrowed $10,000 from Citibank for 3 years at 10% interest. Assume also that the interest is payable annually on December 31. Interest to account for the note are a debit to cash for $10,000 because they received the money, a credit to notes payable for $10,000 because they need to increase their liability to $10,000. So you see the explanation, borrowed $10,000 from Citibank for 3 years. And then you will also see on December 31, they're recording the 10% interest. So we have interest expense that they are going to charge to an expense of $1,000 as a debit and credit to cash for $1,000. So they made their first annual interest payment on Citibank note at $10,000 times 10%. If you look on 2013 entry, we see another interest expense they paid for $1,000 and then credit cash for $1,000. So they made their second interest payment. And then on 2014, we have interest expense of $1,000. They paid the note off in December 31 of 2014. So we debit the note to get rid of the liability and credit cash to record the amount of cash that's being expended on the note. Now, these journal entries are very important because you will see that this is the basic understanding of the accounting theory behind borrowing money and also debiting the or charging the interest and paying out the cash at the end of the note when the note was due. Let's turn now to page 458 concerning mortgage payables. And remember, mortgage payables are usually longer life than regular note payables, usually 20 or 30 years. And we usually get mortgages on buildings or homes or industrial plants. But remember that when we talk about mortgages, we need to understand that the amount of accrued interest needs to be in every year of the mortgage, depending on the amortization schedule. And you will see down on the bottom of the page a 100,000 25-year mortgage amortization type table depending on different interest rates. But let's take a look at the top of the page. To illustrate the accounting for a mortgage, assume that McGivin Automobile Company borrows $100,000 on January 1 to purchase a new showroom and signs a mortgage agreement pledging the showroom as collateral on the loan. If the mortgage is for 8% for 30 years and the payment is $773.76, payable on January 31 with subsequent payments due at the end of each month. Therefore, the interest to record the acquisition of the mortgage and first monthly payments are, so remember, they received cash to buy the building, to purchase a new showroom. So we have a debit to cash for $100,000, and then we have a credit to mortgage payable for $100,000. And so it looks like they borrowed $100,000 to purchase the automobile showroom. Okay, so the first month's mortgage payment. Now, notice that it's a debit to mortgage payable for $67.09. The $67.09 represents principal only. Remember, principal only. That's the reason why when we look at a home mortgage and we add up the number of payments that we're making on the home mortgage versus the amount of interest that we're paying, we've paid quite a bit for that house. So we then have a debit to interest expense for $666.67, and of course a credit to cash for $733.76. So I will not make you compute the interest on an amortization schedule for the test, but what I will have you to do is to understand the accounting theory behind the mortgage and also to understand how to make the journal entry. So let's continue to read. As the entry shows, only $67.09 of the $733.76 payment is applied to reduce the mortgage. The remainder is interest, which is $100,000 times 0.08 times 1/12. In each successive month, the amount applied to reduce the mortgage will increase slightly until and toward the end of the 30-year mortgage, almost all the payments will be reductions in the mortgage balance. Note, a mortgage amortization schedule identifies how much each mortgage payment is interest and how much is principal reduction, as shown in Exhibit 10-3. A similar table can be prepared for each year of the mortgage. So if you get a chance, go to the internet and just go to Google or Yahoo and type in mortgage amortization schedule, and you can play with the numbers. You can do a $100,000 note at 6% look at the numbers. They do them free. It's just a matter of calling it up on the internet, and you can determine the interest and see the not only your interest but your payments over a 30-year period. So let's take a look at Exhibit 10.3 on page 459. It's a mortgage amortization schedule for year one for 12 monthly payments. Now take a look at the monthly payments. You got 733.76. The interest for the first month is 66.67. Second month, 666.22, 665.77 for third, fourth, fifth. Till you get to the 12th month, you're seeing you're paying less and less interest. And notice on the other side, you're paying more and more principal. So you've gone from payment one for 67.09 in principal to reducing the principal at the 12th month or of the period at 72.18. And notice that your mortgage balance then is 99.164.7 after the first year. And that's the reason why I informed you that when you buy a house and you get an interest rate on that house and a mortgage after 30 years, you paid quite a bit of sum of cash for that house for the sake of having it for a mortgage. Let's turn to page 460, accounting for lease obligations. Remember, we're going to account for capital leases as if they have an interest built into them. Remember, an operating lease does not have an interest amount computed in them, because in most cases in operating lease, we either turn the equipment back or give the apartment back, or however that is to be taken care of. So let's look at the middle of the page here, and let's take a reading here. As discussed in Chapter 9, a company may choose to lease rather than purchase an asset. If a lease is a simple short-term rental agreement called an operating lease, lease payments are recorded at rent expense by the lessee and revenue by the lessor. However, if the terms of the lease agreement meets specific criteria, and we saw in Chapter 9 on page 383, the transaction is classified as a capital lease and is accounted for if the asset has been purchased with long-term debt. So what their book is trying to tell you is that we are actually recording a lease at long-term debt instead of getting a note. So the lessee records lease property at an asset and records liability as a lessor. In Chapter 9, we focused on the recording of assets acquired under capital leases using assumed amounts for the present value. Here we'll explain how the present value of capital lease is determined. Let's take a look at the illustration. To illustrate the measurement and recording of a capital lease, assume that Malone Corporation leases a mainframe computer from Macro Data Incorporated on December the 31st, 2011. The lease requires annual payments of $10,000 for 10 years, with the first payment due on December 31, 2012. The rate of interest applicable to the lease is 14% compounded annually. Assuming the lease meets the criteria for a capital lease, Malone will record the computer and related liability at the present value of the future lease payments. From Table 2, look at Table 2 in the Appendix B, the factor for 10 payments at 14%, the present value of that is 5.21. So this factor is multiplied by the annual lease payments to determine the present value of the entry recorded lease on Malone's book. So let's take a look at it. We've got a lease computer, and it's not just for $50,000 for five payments. It's what? It's $52,161, and the lease liability is $52,161. So we have a debit to lease computer and a credit to lease liability. A schedule of the computer lease payments is presented in 10-4. So look at the bottom of the page of 10-4, 461. You will see that the annual payment is $10,000. Notice at the end of the year, we have a debit to interest expense of $7,303 and a credit to lease liability of $2,697 and a credit to cash of $10,000. Let's look at the explanation. Paid annual lease payment for a computer, $552,161 times 0.14. So we've got $7,303 is your interest expense. Is the reduction of the liability of $2,697. But notice how much interest we paid just on the first year alone for the leasing of the equipment. So let's look at the top of the page. Each year, the lease liability account balance is multiplied by 14% to determine the amount of interest included in each annual payment of lease payments. Note that this is the same procedure used with a mortgage when determining the amount of each payment that is applied to reduce the principal and the amount that is considered interest expense. So let's look at the table below. Look, in year one, we have annual payments of $10,000. So we got 1.4 times 52,161 is our interest expense is 7303. Our principal we've reduced for 2,697. And we have a lease liability of 49,464. As we go down after the 10th year, you see that we're paying more and more principal and we're paying less interest expense because the fact that the principal is being reduced times the 14%. Now, on the test, I will give you the amount of interest expense and lease liability, and may have you compute the first year, but I'm not going to have you compute the years after that, because that would take a long calculation. Remember, on a capital lease, we are recording the asset at the time that we purchase the lease. Let's look on the top of page 462 about operating leases. When a lease is accounted for as a capital lease, the lease obligation associated with leased asset will appear on the balance sheet of the company using the leased asset. If, on the other hand, a company is able to classify a lease as an operating lease according to the criteria outlined in Chapter 9, nothing will appear on the balance sheet. That's a very, very important point. Nothing will appear on the balance sheet. We don't record the lease payable, nor do we record the asset in which we are leasing. Now remember, for GAAP purposes, this won't be on your test, but for GAAP purposes, we must record the operating lease in the footnotes to show that the reader, make for sure that they understand that there is an outstanding liability out there. Neither the leased asset nor the lease liability will be recognized. For this reason, an operating lease is often referred to as a form of off-balance sheet financing. Well, it may be off-balancing sheet financing, but it is definitely for the sake of footnote reporting. The economic obligation associated with the financing arrangement entered into to secure the use of the asset is not reported on the balance sheet. Okay, this ends the lecture on leases, mortgages, and notes payable, and how to compute present value and the value of annuity. I want you to make sure that you read over your materials very carefully. And I'm going to be gone, and Dr. Dodgen will be in class to cover some aspects of bonds. I will talk briefly about bonds here in a minute on the next lecture. But if you have any questions while I'm gone, be sure to email me. You have my email address. I'll try to help you as much as I can. So thank you very much.